This episode was recorded in Naam. In Woiwurrung language, people use this word to refer to the scrubland of the now greater Melbourne CBD area. In Boonwurrung language, people use this word to refer to the bay that sits alongside Melbourne. I pay my respects to the elders past and present. Australia lies on unceded Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander land. It's our responsibility to learn about and respect country, and respect the First Peoples who have cared for it for tens of thousands of years. Why do birds have feathers? And why do their legs bend backwards? Welcome to Weekend Birder. I'm Kirsty Costa, and this episode is all about answering some of your general bird questions. Joining us is wildlife ecologist, author, and fellow bird nerd, Gráinne Cleary.
I've always been interested in birds. They were my first love. I always wanted to work with wildlife. I never wanted to be like work with captive animals or be an animal nurse. It was always what's happening in the wild that attracted me. And I grew up in very urbanized Dublin, you know, a lot of buildings around, a lot of cleared vegetation, and there weren't many birds. So the bird I got to know a lot was the house sparrow, the same little fella we have here in Victoria in South Australia. But it was just what he did in our back garden, the magic of what's happening in that back garden from these little birds, that whole life just really captured my imagination. I went to Africa. My mom and dad worked for the EU and went over as EU volunteers and brought us over at the age of 10. And we were there for about 2.5 years. And you know, I saw the Serengeti and the big games. And you know, we met David Attenborough, who was out with his crew, Philomena. You know, and I saw all that and we came back to Ireland. And it was still, no, for me, it's the magic of what's going on in your own back garden, how we see wildlife every day and how we can really interact with it. And I think birds are just a great example of that. And then I came to Australia and wow, then my love for them grew even more. We've got rid of so much of our own native wildlife through farming. You know, there's been such a long history of clearing of native vegetation and extinction of native wildlife that when we come to Australia, we really see it and you think, wow, this needs to be protected. This really is unique.
Gráinne's love of Australian birds and her training in wildlife ecology led her to writing two books. She is such an engaging writer and she's able to translate complex scientific information into something that we can all understand.
So I'm dyslexic and I found it very hard to write scientifically. I really, really tried because, you know, being a PhD, being a researcher, that's where I wanted to go academically. But I was always told, no, you're writing too simply. It's not complex enough. You're making it too colloquial. After I did a radio interview, a person from Allen and Unwin Publishing, one of the big publishing houses here in Australia, contacted me and said, have you ever thought about writing a book? And I hadn't, because I was very much stuck in this direction of, if you want to influence people, you go through the academic route, you stay in university. And then it was only once I started writing that book, and I really fell in love with being able to write simply and being really able to put my own voice in it. And then how quickly I sent it to the publishers and how quickly they loved it. So with my history of writing, it was hard. I would try. I would do my best. I'd break my heart. I would give it into my co-author. They would kill it and give it back to me. And I'd just be like, why can't I do this? Why is this so hard? I'm dyslexic. I could never speak their language. I tried, but I couldn't. But I can speak the colloquial language of the man on the street. So I was like, at the age of 45, let's do where my strengths lie. Let's talk to the public, which is what I always wanted to do anyway. I just assumed it always had to be done through peer-reviewed scientific papers.
Gráinne's first book is called Your Backyard Birds.
That came from a study I was running, which was looking at feeding in the backyard. And people would email me with little stories about their birds. An example of the story was a lady who had a bird bath. And she had fairy wrens. And one day, a load of thornbills turned up. And she said, what? And I explained to her that thornbills and fairy wrens will often coexist in an area. And they'll often listen to each other and follow each other. The thornbills would have followed those fairy wrens, watched the fairy wrens, used the bird bath, made the association and found it and went back and used it themselves. So it was answering those questions, and I had so many. I was like, that's what I wrote, very much that question and answers, then led on to the second book.
Gráinne's second book is called Why Do Birds Do That? The idea came out of her regular segment on ABC Breakfast Radio in Canberra.
Every week, you know, to call and phone in with a question, and I would answer that question. And one of the first questions I got asked, how does a bird stay on the wire when it's really windy? How does it not fall off? Actually, you know, that is a really good question. So after that initial question, I was like, no, do your research. So I'd research all the questions. And another question that came in that I thought, I know the answer to this one, was the bower bird collecting the blue. Why does it collect the blue? And once I read into that, I discovered how they will actually use their saliva to paint the wall that the female will then come in and taste, because that gives her an indication of the male's health. And I didn't even know that. So no matter how much you think you know, there's always more to learn. And that book really inspired that. So one question that I would be asked by one of the listeners would lead to 2-3 more questions. That book wrote itself. While I was writing the other book, I was gathering all these questions from the public and just writing them down and keeping notes. So the book kind of came out that way.
I did a poll on social media and people voted on their favourite questions from the book, Why Do Birds Do That? Gráinne is here to answer them for us. The first question is, why do birds have feathers?
We initially thought that birds had feathers because they fly. No, we now know that dinosaurs had feathers. And the feathers were used for display, and the feathers were used to help keep their eggs cool. It was only later on that they developed into flight. 2 theories on how we think that came about. One of them is that as the dinosaur was running after an insect, it would kind of move its forearms a bit where it had the feathers and slowly gain height, slowly, slowly, and help it catch that insect. And those kind of behaviours were passed on. Today, we know, you know, birds have feathers, and yes, they do use them for flight, but they also use them to communicate with each other. You can tell so much just from their feather placement around their beak. The bird can smile at you. It puffs up its feathers around its beak and kind of squints its eye at you. So they use it a lot in communication, which I found fascinating.
Head way back into the episode archive to learn about superb fairy wrens with Holly Kirk in episode 4. The next question that people voted for is, why do some birds have colourful feathers and others do not?
The message they want their feathers to display. So you have birds that come into sexual maturity at certain times of the year, such as your fairy wren. He'll go into his beautiful blue feathers at the start of spring, attract the female and show that he is ready to mate. These feathers are very hard to maintain. They need to be in really good condition. And the bird needs to eat particular food even to help produce those colours. So they lose them in the winter when the food resources aren't as great and they don't need to be shown off and marking their territory, because the feathers are also an indication to another male. I'm a dominant breeding male. Leave this territory alone. This is my territory. If another male looks at that bird and that bird's feathers are all raggedy, and they're not bright blue, and they don't have that beautiful iridescent, and they're all shabby, that male will think, he's not in good condition. I bet you I could take him on. So the feathers tell a lot, it communicates a lot about the bird's fitness, about the bird's mood, and about even its sexual state, or whether he's ready to mate or not ready. So we have birds that stay together all year and don't hold a territory, example, galahs. There's no difference in the plumage colour between male and female galahs. Cockatoos, we look at the eye colour. They also nest in hollows. So you can't see the female from the outside because she's in a hollow. Now, if you put that in contrast with the fairy wren, you have a male that needs to hold a territory and he needs to also show others that he is dominant. So he brings out these beautiful colours, as we were talking about, so he can translate that message. Now, the female won't have these bright colours because she can't be conspicuous on the nest. She needs to blend into the environment. If she was sitting there bright red or bright yellow or bright blue, a predator would see her a mile off. So that's a lot of the reason why we have the females. The females were initially as colourful as the male, but over time they lost that coloration because it helped them be more camouflaged when they're on the nest. Think of the bower bird that's grey. So the female is green, she's not brown. And that might have to do with that more rainforesty environment they will be found in. Purple cap fairy wren, shows that the brighter that is, the more dominant that is. He's a strong individual. But then if you have something like the mistletoe bird and its habitat, where it spends more of its time, it wants to blend in more. It's got a lot to do with what the message is the bird's trying to say with its feather.
You can learn more about bird feathers in episode 67 with Freya Noss. The next question is, why do birds have three eyelids?
So nicotate membrane. So we initially had what is that bit in your eye, the corner of your eye. And sometimes you can see just that part of your eye where you can get really bad blood vessels sometimes. That's our remnant of our nicotate membrane. Birds have it. And again, if you think about that little fairy wren flying through dense vegetation, how does it see? How does it do it without getting something in its eye? It puts on the nicotate membrane. Nicotate membrane is semi-transparent and it lubricates the eye. It goes across the eye like wind wipers, the rain wipers off your car. And it helps clean debris out of the eye. And also, if you think about how birds hunt underwater, such as the penguin, they'll bring out that nicotate membrane to help protect the eye while diving and hunting.
If you Google nicotating membrane, you'll find some very weird photos of birds activating their third eyelid. Interestingly, birds make the most of this membrane when they are preening to avoid accidentally scratching their eyes with their feathers. The nicotating membrane is also found on the eyes of fish, amphibians, reptiles, and mammals, but is rare in primates. Personally, I think one would be very handy, especially while swimming or standing at the beach on a very windy day. Okay, our last question for Gráinne is, why do birds' legs bend backwards?
What you think is the knee that bends backward is actually the ankle. The bird's kneecap is much further up its leg. A lot of birds have deceptively long legs, so they're not half as short as we think they are. And then nice and scaly. A lot of times they don't have feathers on it. They can use them to adapt to a whole variety of environments. So you have birds that have the tiniest, skinny little legs like the fairy wrens. They spend a lot of time hopping about the ground. Compare that to something like a lorikeet that would spend more time hanging out of blossoms on eucalypt. They have kind of shorter, more stronger legs to help clasp. And then if we look at the cockatoo, they use their feet to help eat. So you'll notice that a lot of cockatoos will use their left foot. They use their left foot so they can use their left eye to coordinate eye-foot movement to help pick out those seeds that are hidden in that banksia. And that helps drive intelligence because of that coordination, it's that concentration and manipulation of the food. One of the things I learned recently, again, because you think after writing that book, I would know everything about birds. Not at all, not at all. With the last mass extinction that saw the dinosaurs go, one of the things that happened was the collapsation of the photosynthesis because, you know, the sun with all the dust, the forest kind of shut down. And you had these birds that survived on sea and seeds were still around. So they weren't that specialized. And once the kind of the world came back stable, these birds could immediately diverse into a whole range of habitats and niches that were left open. And part of that, they think, were their feet and the ability to be able to climb and adapt to a whole range of open niches that were left after the dinosaurs went extinct. So you think your brush turkey, but your brush turkey is your old species. They started on the ground and then moved up into the trees. That always got me. Those nests you see the magpie in, that's a newer nest evolutionary than the old nest of the brush turkey. Absolutely fascinating.
Gráinne's current exploration is into how bird societies are similar to human societies, and she wants to tell us all about it.
We have a lot in common with them. They live in these complex societies, such as the fairy wrens show us all the time, such as our parrots show us. They communicate with each other. They need to be able to live in an environment where they can determine what the other bird is thinking. Is that bird angry? Is that bird hungry? Is that bird being aggressive? And being able to change your mood to suit that environment. That just blew me away, just how they live in these ever-changing environments. Birds that join flocks, like flocks of corellas we see, they'll come together and break apart, but they'll often be able to communicate and remember who's who based on calls. And we do the same. We go to the shops, we see a woman who makes our coffee. Then we have our best friends. So we have all these different levels of people we interact with. Birds do the same. They have their partners. They have people they see when they come to the flock together. They have people, the birds they see when they eat together. And maintaining all these social networks drives brain evolution. It's one of the reasons we think we're so smart with our neocortex. It's because of society. Birds are the same. Fascinating.
Recently, Ed Yong wrote a great article about birdwatching in the New York Times. He explained how birdwatching in his local area had made the natural world feel close and accessible. Ed writes, "When I step outside my door in the morning, I take an oral census of the neighbourhood, tuning into the chatter of creatures that were always there and that I might have previously overlooked." So many Weekend Birder guests and listeners can relate to this, and so can Gráinne.
Get to know your birds in your urban environment. Don't be always racing off to see that tiny little bird in the middle of nowhere. We have some of the best birds living right with us. Get to know them and spend time watching their behaviour. Don't be just so quick to say, "Seen that bird, mark it off my bird watching list." Get to know them a bit. That because they'll surprise you, and just watching them. And it's great for your mental health. It really is. It can take you out of your own head and just, you know, you watch this little creature doing its thing. And put in a bird bath. If you don't have a bird bath, put in a bird bath. It will bring you endless joy. Give the bird time to find it. It takes, you know, a while for the bird to actually find it and then decide to use it. So be patient and keep refilling it. You're in the best country in the world to do this. And it's, yeah, absolutely love it. Love the birds here. There's so much to learn.
Many thanks for sharing your birding passion with us, Gráinne. You've taught me so much useful information about birds. I highly recommend Gráinne's two books. And I'm giving away a copy of Why Do Birds Do That to a lucky subscriber of the monthly letter. The monthly letter is a short and personal email from me, and you automatically go into the running to win the giveaway just by subscribing. Visit weekendbirder.com to find out more. And while you're there, tap on How to see the latest bird ID guides for egrets, little brown birds, and little yellow birds. I also share these on Instagram and Facebook. In the next episode, we're going to talk to one of my favourite photographers, Shelley Pearson. Speak to you again soon.